Okay. Thank you very much. That was a really nice overview of the fertilizer situation, and I really appreciated the comments on the public-private cooperation, so I'll address some of that. And I work with DuPont Pioneer, have for 32 years. Training is in agronomy, so I spent about 13 years in North America as agronomy, and then worked internationally as an agronomy manager, and then also business director for Asia, and then back to North America. Now, today, I work with our Global Forages business and have responsibility for international agronomy outside of North America at DuPont. So, my remarks will probably be skewed a little bit to the seed industry, but I think that's really important when we looked at a key input into small-scale farmer success. And I'm kind of a replacement for Sandy Endicott. She's a fantastic agronomist, part of our international agronomy team. Just couldn't make it here today, but we have similar experiences, so I'll try and do a reasonable job of pinch hitting for her. So, you know, and I've had a chance to work with small scale farmers, and it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done because it's an interesting contrast between North America or the large farmers in Latin America, whatever, and the small-scale farmers. There's nothing more rewarding than to see a small-scale farmer increase his productivity and profitability because it changes their life. It doesn't just allow them to buy a boat or take a vacation. So I think the small-scale farmers, you know, absolutely want to increase their yields just like the large farmers, as I just said, provide a better life and opportunity, better education for their kids, improve living conditioning, and some sense of financial security. Now, maybe not the North American definition of financial security, but certainly a lot better than what they were doing before they could improve their productivity. And improving the productivity of small-scale farmers is, in my opinion, the only way we're really going to raise production around the world. Yeah, we continue to raise production in North America, Brazil, et cetera, the developed markets. But, you know, we're at 172 or 3 bushels per acre this year in North America. You know, we're not going to take that to 300 in the next 10 years. It'll probably get there, but not in my career, not in my lifetime probably. So we really need to, it's so much easier from an agronomic perspective to increase the yield of a small-scale farmer. And they will adopt new technologies and management practices, but they have to deliver value. I mean, I see the small-scale farmers, you know, they're not formally educated, but they're really smart. You know, they're very observant, and they're looking for the same thing. A farmer is a farmer around the world, and I was in Pakistan once visiting with a really good farmer there, and he made a comment I'll never forget. He said, once they get past the language barrier, a farmer can talk to a farmer anywhere in the world and have a really rich conversation because they're dealing with the same things, whether they're 10,000 hectares or a half an acre. So I think it's really, really an important point. The technologies must be affordable, but not cheap. I mean, cheap is cheap. You got to pay for value, and that's just the way it is around the world. I've been in the seed business for, like I said, 30 years plus, and my observation around the world is products are priced not relative to what they cost, but relative to what the market will bear. And that's just reality. Everything we buy is priced that way, and seed fertilizer is the same way. The small-scale farmers are starving for information, and they're very receptive to that and the new technologies. And adoption can be extremely rapid. Now, the most rampant thing I've ever seen was I was working in Asia at the time that BT cotton was introduced. I mean, it just was a tidal wave across the cotton market. So there again, it's back to my point about if they see value, they'll adopt the technology. And a good friend of mine who was a country manager for our business in Indonesia, he said these poor farmers will complain about the price, but then they'll find the money to buy the seed if it really is going to improve their livelihood. And that's not the case everywhere. That was the case, his observation, in Indonesia. So how to improve their yields and profitability? I think, you know, I'm a little bit biased, I'll admit that, but I think the seed is really an important part. But I think above that is just really management information. And as a company, we're committed to, we're not going to sell our seed anywhere in the world that we can't provide management information and we can't test the products to make sure that they work in that environment. Because we talk about right product, right acre, that's kind of a tagline, but we really live that. Because one product, just because it works well here, doesn't mean it's going to work well even in the next state or the next part of the state. It's very specific to soil conditions. So we, you know, you can't test it enough, but we try to test it so that we can make a good recommendation to the farmers. So that's really an important part of our business. Fertility was addressed, I think, very well. Weeds and pest management, water. I mean, those are about the issues. Now, it's easy to put them on a slide, but it's very difficult to execute in all cases. So I guess the question is, why should a multinational company care about small-scale farmers? And I think it's because we should. I mean, that's part of what we do as an organization, is we try and improve the productivity of farmers around the world. Now, granted, we're drawn to markets like North America. It's a very lucrative market. Everybody's there. It's a very competitive market, but, you know, you got to be there. And China, for example, I spent a lot of time in China. China is very small-scale farmers, but I think, you know, their technology adoption is well ahead of certainly Africa and any other market in Asia, not only in corn, but in rice. They're 100% hybrid in corn, probably 50% hybrid in rice, way above anybody else in Asia. This is really, and this isn't a commercial, this is just, well, maybe a little. This is something that our leaders put down on paper back in the 1950s. Pioneers, just about 90 years old, started in 1926, but in the early 50s, one of our leaders just sat down and kind of wrote what we really do as an organization. And it comes down to this, and we really do live this. Produce the best products on the market, that's what we try to do, and deal honestly and fairly with our customers. We're going to advertise and sell our products vigorously, but not without misrepresentation. And the last one is near and dear to our hearts, and Paul Carter has used this many times. It's really what defines agronomy in Pioneer. And our agronomy services started about a little over 50 years ago in North America, and it's spread throughout the world, and it's an important part of what we offer to our customers beyond the product. So we really do owe them management suggestions to make the most money or most profit from our products. So back to why we should care. Small-scale farmers represent a big growth opportunity. I mean, the big developed markets, you know, are developed and very competitive. The opportunities are out there in the small scale, you know, India, Africa, etc. It's not an easy segment to reach. It takes a lot of time and takes a lot of feet on the ground. But the private sector and DuPont Pioneer will invest where opportunities exist and business environments are acceptable. And I think that gets to the point of, you know, subsidies and how far they go. As an organization, we haven't had good experience with subsidies for seed. Because, and I'll preempt what I'm going to show here a little bit later, but we have a current example right now in Ghana. We have really good development going on there, adoption of hybrid seeds, and growers were experiencing 2 to 3 times their yield, and now the government has come in and said, you have to produce the seed locally. We can't do that. And we could, but it takes time to build the investment. And producing single cross hybrid seed, it's not easy. It's not just something that anybody can do. And there again, back to subsidies. If you have subsidies for hybrid seed, then everybody's going to have a hybrid, and they're not going to know whether it performs, and the farmers are going to come up short on yield. So I think it's really important that we do it right. But the seed, especially hybrid seed, is, you know, it's not easy to produce, and if you don't have the right stuff, it's not going to perform like you think it should or like you expect it to. The private sector and profitability, I mean, we're a for-profit company, is key to adoption and sustainability of any new technology. And I think that's really an important point. But as the previous speaker said, it's a public-private partnership. We can do it alone, but it's more difficult. But when it comes to seed, I think the private industry really needs to lead that to ensure that they have quality seed and that it continues to perform as it needs to. We have a lot of success stories. I mentioned some of these with small-scale farmers, China and India, hybrid corn and hybrid rice. I'll show a graph of India, how the hybrid adoption has changed. Southeast Asia, hybrid corn, BT corn in the Philippines. I don't know how many of you have been to the Philippines, but I've never seen corn borer infestation like they have in the Philippines, so the BT was really revolutionary for them. Africa, of course, hybrid corn. Africa is further behind. There's just no question about that, but I think as an organization, we're committed to Africa, but it's a long-term project. Asia, we're more into the further into the development of that market. Mexico, hybrid corn, still a lot of small-scale farmers in Mexico. I was in central Mexico several years ago, and it was just amazing. You'd see fields of 200 bushel corn right next to some that were gonna, land races that were going to make about a metric ton. You know, and it's just amazing that all they had to do was, you know, plant some seeds and put a little fertilizer on, and they'd grow a lot more corn. But then our country manager told me a story. He had talked to a farmer like that, and he said he was up in the highlands, and he said, you know, if you just planted a different seed, you're making a metric ton per hectare now. You could probably make 3 metric ton without doing anything else. And he says, what would I do with 3 metric ton of corn? Now, oh my God. But it's back to your point about markets critical so that the farmer can sell it and make some money. Requirements for success: a technology that provides value. Not real complicated. A strong and sustained field effort to introduce and support the technology. This is really important. I listened to a presentation of a Chinese guy explaining how they introduced hybrid rice in China back in, I don't know, probably in the 70s, 80s. They deployed 11,000 extension people to take hybrid rice to the farmers. So, I mean, that's China. They can do that. But, I mean, it kind of drives home the point of how important it is to really do the extension effort. Clear and simple management information doesn't need to be complicated. Dependable supply of high-quality inputs and technology, and a commitment by the government to maintain policies and rules that allow these continued access to good quality technology. So I think that's the Ghana example. A few pictures. I love pictures. I actually took all of these in India. You know, these two down in the corner, they're actually producing hybrid rice seed. The lady up there is growing hybrid rice. The others are preparing. And that's actually the president of our company down there, Paul Schickler. These kids got to stay home from school and got all dressed up because we were coming to see them that day. It was really, really cool. But our India team is a master. I mean, that is their market, is OPV to hybrid. That's really what they do. So they've really kind of identified, you know, first you got to select that research, understand and validate. That's the field testing, demonstrate and educate, farmer demos, you know, thousands and thousands of farmer meetings. And then marketing, and then ultimately the sale and sharing it with the growers. Just an example of some of the demonstration and the education that occurs at an India meeting. I mean, they do just thousands and thousands of these a year. Here's the trends in hybrid rice adoption in India and hybrid corn. You can see the corn is a lot steeper than the rice. We're just farther along in corn breeding as an industry. And, you know, there's more heterosis in corn than there is in rice, but I think rice is coming, and it's a critical crop, not only for India, but for other parts of Asia. And the adoption is going, but it's slower. China, amazing market. You know, it's just an amazing market. The guy here, I love this one with the bicycle. He's got a bag of seed. You know, it's got 4,000 kernels in it. It happened to be our seed, but he was riding his bike home to plant that. And you know, they can raise phenomenal corn in China. Some of the best soils I've seen, and the most uniform soils. They don't compare with Iowa and Illinois, but they're very uniform soils and reasonably good farming practices. Training and information is critical. This is in Africa, and there's no better place to educate or talk about management information than in front of a cornfield. You know, it's just a great backdrop for sharing information with growers. And just the most basic information can't be overlooked. This is Sandy there, the gal in the center to the left, just showing people the growing point of corn and, you know, how it's developing and all this stuff. And you know, they're just starving for information. So, okay, what are we doing? And I think from a core business, I probably already addressed that. We're developing and growing our business in Asia and Africa, where the majority of the customers are small-scale farmers. That's a key part of our growth in the future, and we're going to be aggressive in that area. It's a very different approach, package size, promotional material. They don't need bulk seed. They need small bags. And intensity of field activities are a must. And the cost of growth for a company is high because you have to invest so much in the farmer level meetings. Now we're doing several things, a combination of philanthropic and business. There's the Advanced Maize Seed Adoption Program, AMSAP. It's a partnership of USAID and DuPont and country level government, Ethiopia and Ghana, and soon to be in Zambia. Improved maize for African soils, focus on drought nitrogen, CIMMYT, and you can read those too. And then there's a few more. The Africa Biofortified Sorghum, that's a long-term project, started back in 2005. It's a biotech approach, really to improve the nutrition of the sorghum crop in Africa. It's a long-term. And then India Corn Farmer Producer Organizations, just farmers, educating farmers on how to produce hybrid corn. Case study in Ethiopia, this is from the AMSAP. I think we'll go down to the bottom. There's lots of demos, and then it increased farmer income as much as $500. That's a big deal. That was a video that I thought I could show, but if the presentation will be shared, there's a really cool video, YouTube video on AMSAP. It's 3 minutes. It's really neat. It's worth a watch. This is the Ghana, the GAMSAP. And I think the key point here is these are kind of mid-level managers. He had support there. He had support at the top. You did the training and then actually took the people out to the field to show them how to lay out a demonstration plot. So we try to cover all the bases on getting these things, the products tested and deployed. And this is Samuel Kusi. He's presenting here at the World Food Prize. We had a chance to have dinner with him one night, and he told a really good story. He's grown Pioneer Maize for 3 years. It's actually a single cross hybrid that was developed in Southeast Asia, but it works just lots of places. And a key point about products, you know, we just see it in hybrid rice and we see it in hybrid corn. Hybrid plants tolerate stress better, whether it be drought stress, salt stress, whatever. They just tolerate stress better. So I think just moving to that point, even if the fertility would stay the same, I think we would see an increase in yield because just of the experience we've had so many places. He more than tripled his maize yield. He has 7,000 laying hens, and he buys seed for 90 farmers in his village, buys the seed for them. Interest rates are 22%. He doesn't charge them any interest. Buys the seed, buys the grain back, and feeds his chickens, and it's everybody's making money on that deal. The bad thing is now he can't access the seed because the government has said it has to be produced locally. We can't import. He's really upset, and I don't blame him. But he's confident that they'll get that fixed because he would not buy seed that was from the government because he said it won't be good, it won't be pure. So, and he's I don't want to be critical, but he's probably right. This is a cool story. This is my last slide after this, and it's a lot of words, so I'll prepare you, but it's really worth the read. She was this assistant farmer, disabled husband. She got some Pioneer seed. She was growing a 1.3 metric ton, raised that to 5.2 metric ton per hectare. She sold 75% and did a lot of good things with the, bought a cow, paid for her daughter's wedding, and really cool things like that. I mean, these stories are just touching. And it's not just the emotional side. She's making more money. She's going to plant more seed, and then she's engaged a bunch of other women to do the same thing. So, sorry if I went over a little bit.
Thank you so much. We've got... You want to take a question or two?
I didn't know you had
one.
Yeah.
Hi. I'm wondering, so if Pioneer's producing seed for that zone, is it solely based on yield, or is it okay taking into account like a familiar variety that they already have so that there's a market?
Really good question. Yield is one criteria, but you know, the disease, pests, all this stuff, the suitability of the grain. This happens to be Ghana is yellow corn. That is a yellow hybrid, but most of our business in Africa is white, and so we have a white development program several places, but certainly in Africa that's a key priority. Plus it has to meet milling standards, color, you know, because it's a staple food, and it's like rice in Asia. It has to meet the needs of the ultimate consumer, and that's your palate. Yeah.
So how much fertilizer do you have to increase, or the farmers need to increase to put in the hybrids, to grow hybrids?
Well, it wouldn't be any different than anywhere else. You know, you really just, nitrogen's nitrogen. You just got to apply enough. Well, I think the hybrids will benefit. If you're limiting nitrogen, a hybrid's going to out-yield an OPV. If there's adequate nitrogen, it's going to more than out-yield. I mean, that's what hybrids do. But even if you're limited on nitrogen, I think you'll see an increase in yield just because of the nitrogen use efficiency that hybrids have an advantage over open pollinated varieties.
Maybe I missed this. I came a little bit late, but are you guys promoting any GM seed material in African markets where import and growing of GM materials is allowed?
I think, to my knowledge, South Africa is the only place that GMOs, or at least growing GMO seed, is allowed. And yes, we've been there since we've introduced GMOs in 1998, actually, in South Africa. So it's still an important part of our business for corn borer control.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.